Good morning, John, Paul, and Mike. Listeners, I expect you are waiting to hear from our special guest this morning. Well, this is John Jurisic of John, Paul, and Mike, and frankly, another technology glitch. The first 12 minutes of a good 50-minute conversation on the morning of Monday, May 29th, is gone. So I'm giving a little preamble. It's mid-afternoon. I have listened to the 2 p.m. announcement where the Green Party and the NDP will be working together in the legislature. So Adam Olson, MLA, myself and Paul Holmes, we had a chat with Adam. We were hoping for that conversation not to be about politics. So I'll just give you a sense of the missing 12 minutes. We questioned and interviewed Adam, asked him about what's it like to door knock. He gave a fantastic summary. Anyway, that saves for another day. Paul Holmes gave his great, "This is John, Paul, and Mike," that only Paul Holmes can do. We tried hard to not talk about politics with a politician in the midst of quite a bit of political activity, so that was naive, maybe stretching. And I think, unless Adam flatly thinks I don't know what I'm doing, which is validated, we'll have some regular discussions. Anyway, as we enter at the 12-minute mark, Adam was really talking about the message that he was delivering at the doorstep, the message the Green Party was telling folks. And then we go through the rest of the podcast, which I really hope you will enjoy. We had a lot of fun. See you later.
The candidate and their ability to make real connections with people. The leader, I think, has a great deal, you know, the performance in the debates has a great deal of pieces to this. And so, you know, I think that what's important is that all of these things, all of these pieces are consistent. And what I think that we were able to do in Saanich North and the Islands, and what we were able to do in growing our vote, I think almost 200,000 votes across the province, is that we had a very, very consistent campaign. We had a very consistent message. We decided very early on that we were going to remain positive and that we were going to remain hopeful.
And now, okay, devil's advocate.
Sure.
That's what Adrian Dix said, and he got his ass kicked.
There's a difference between and there's a clear distinction between what we did and what they did in 2013. Not pointing out where your political competitors may have erred in their ways by letting them off the hook is different than being positive and hopeful.
Right.
Our platform talked about the future of British Columbia. We didn't go back and say, in the 1990s, you did this, blah, blah, blah. In the 2000s, you did this. We didn't really go there. What we did was we said, we have a responsibility for British Columbians from 2017 going forward. So we talked about investing in education and educating people so that they can be prepared for the transitioning jobs market that's out there. We talked about the future of healthcare rather than the past of healthcare. We talked about how we needed to have interdisciplinary offices that were, rather than saying this is how we see 1950 style healthcare, we said how do we see it in the 21st century.
Mm.
We talked about the positive opportunities for this province with in the mix holding the government to account and holding the official opposition to account. As you know, the decisions and the public policy that they put forward, we were critical of that. Because if we weren't, if we let them off the hook, then why wouldn't we just run for one of those other parties?
Yeah.
So the thing I like about the election outcomes isn't just because my prediction was correct.
Who knows what your where is that recorded?
My prediction. No, I was on the record. Liberal minority with a green balance of power. I predicted the Greens would get 5 seats. So I really thought that there would be a couple more. But I had them ahead of the NDP by 2.
Then you had a good pulse of what's going on.
Which is completely the opposite of the last election, where I thought the NDP was going to win in a landslide.
A lot of people did.
Anyway, so what we saw was the NDP vote went up. The Green vote obviously went up.
What do you mean the NDP vote
this,
went up?
This election.
Popular
vote.
Barely.
Yeah, popular vote. The popular vote went up.
Barely, like a percentage.
It did. The Green vote went up, and the Liberal vote went down a little bit.
So, no, it went down quite a bit.
Quite a bit.
I think down so, 4% yeah, or something.
So.
To be fair.
Yes. to get to my point, John.
Yes, of course.
To get to my point, John. Can we finally put aside this notion of votes splitting nonsense? Like, are the opposition parties, namely the NDP, still going to continue to ride the Green Party about this idea that if you vote for the Green Party, that you're stealing a vote from the NDP? Which, by the way, I was personally offended by, because I've historically always voted for the Liberal
NDP.
Party.
Oh, no, right.
I've always historically... Nice try.
Yeah, boy.
I've always voted, every election of my life, I voted for the BC Liberal Party until I switched to the Green Party in the last two elections. And right. So I'm not one of those people. And when an NDP supporter comes along and says, oh, you're going to split the vote. It's like, no, I'm not splitting anything. Like, I'm choosing which I think is going to be the best option.
This is a good
and
topic.
It ain't you. And, you know.
Well, look at because there was a lot of ugliness around this splitting vote stuff, eh?
My God.
Was there?
It was.
Yes. Okay, I'll say it. You don't have to say it. I've been involved in a couple of elections, and I've seen that the stuff on social media, some of the discussions.
Nasty.
Extraordinarily nasty.
Yeah. It was awful. And look, I'll just... let's take a look at Saanich North and the Islands as an example. Because in this election, the NDP candidate, the incumbent, got a couple hundred more votes than he did in the 2013 election. So his vote increased, right? The Liberal vote...
Collapsed.
Collapsed.
Yeah. Like in half,
dropped,
right?
Like 1,000... Well, over two election cycles, it's almost
collapsed.
Half.
Yeah.
And the Green vote since 2013 and 2017 went from 3,200 in 2009 to 14,775. The voter turnout in Saanich North and the Islands was second in the province in 2013 at 69%. This time, 76% of the people in the riding voted.
Wow.
So the vote splitting narrative is based on a two-party system, mm-hmm. where everybody does exactly what they've always done.
Right.
And you pointed it out earlier, and what we're trying to show is that it's no longer a two-party system. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a third party, and not everybody is going to do what they've always done.
Well, nearly half of British Columbians don't vote.
In fact, a whole pile of people in our riding, 4,000 people, new.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to be up to my campaign manager and my campaign to figure out where those people came from.
Wouldn't it be great if we could repeat that in the province, though? Right? I mean, ultimately, why is it that half the people on election day choose not to vote? And to me, it's pretty obvious. They don't see a good option. They can't be bothered to waste their time. Right? I mean, there's no reason we shouldn't see 60-70%. You know. Certainly that many people are capable of voting, but they're not.
Well, but and it has to do with, I mean, you guys have been in political campaigns for a long time. You know how they're run. There's two ways to get elected. Encourage everybody to come out and vote. Encourage as many, many people to come out and vote as not. Or just encourage your supporters to get out and vote and discourage those who are not your supporters to stay to vote.
Right.
Right? Sure. So basically the vote splitting narrative is one to, it's not... technically voter suppression, but it's voter discouragement.
Yep.
It's to discourage voters from showing up to vote for what they want to vote for.
So the vote-splitting narrative falls apart when one is optimistic that 45% of people who didn't vote, some percentage of those decide they're going to vote. And you're growing the vote.
Exactly.
Okay.
So I'm gonna. The other thing about vote splitting, which is very, very dangerous, and I heard this as the last weeks of the election were upon us, and that was, tell me what the polls say, and I'll tell you how I'm gonna vote. And I'm just thinking, this is really like the most powerful thing that a person, the most powerful thing a person has is their ability to vote in a democracy.
Yeah.
And they're basically, so many people were saying to me, well, where are you? Show me you're ahead in the polls and I'll vote for you. And I said, look, I'm hoping that you vote for me because I'm a good candidate.
Yeah.
Because you think I'm going to represent you well in the legislature. Because our campaign has been well put together, powered by...
Yeah, but Adam, you know people vote because they want to vote for a winner. Like
But hold on, though. When I said
I've
that
never
to
voted
people,
for a winner.
when I said that to people, they said, no, you know what? You're absolutely right. And they went back. So part of what it is that
ultimately,
the vote splitting message
for a winner.
Is an easy one. Yeah. It's an easy one to put out. Yeah. But it's one that I think that over the past 5 or 6 years, I think that we've chipped away at, we're eroding. And you know what? The next time around, it's going to be that much more difficult to run that narrative.
So let's talk about this polling thing, okay? And let's go back into the election period, okay? The 4 weeks once the writ was dropped.
Yeah.
I think after about the first week, after about 10 days, out comes a poll mm-hmm. that says, holy crap. Greens are leading on the island.
Correct.
Did you guys know about that beforehand? And what was the sense amongst your team, amongst the party, when that came out?
Peak too early.
Because that must have like, oh, either there was a, oh my God, something's happening. Did you already know that? Like, tell us about that.
So we were 15%, 16%. Up to the writ. Traditionally, that's where the BC Greens are. 16% of people said they vote. Then the writ drops and they're like, okay, now who am I going to vote for? Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
That's been our history.
Yeah, yeah.
The fact that we were a week and then 2 weeks and then 3 weeks into the election and these numbers were still showing up.
Yes.
That, you know, that was encouraging for us, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
But that's only one metric in a whole pile. I mean, you know, that's a whole pile
I know,
of metrics
but,
that you're running.
Well,
so it, what it was doing, yeah. what it was doing was it was confirming information that we already knew. So
from your poll, canvassing,
from all of the different things that we were doing, our events, we got 1,000 people in the convention center on opening night. Like, that doesn't happen for the BC Greens. Mm-hmm. We were having canvassers coming back going, this is mind-blowing insane. This, you lost this poll by a huge margin, and there are a number of people that are just ready to vote for you. They're,
but that's
they're
happened before, has it not? Paul and in BC election history, where there's been momentum and it's collapsed on election day.
So this was the point. And you mentioned it, momentum. You mentioned momentum. Does it collapse? The number one key thing for us was that we needed to continue to build that all the way through to just a few minutes past the polls closing on election day.
What does that mean? So, build. What,
we want for, to build
for
momentum.
People who don't
we want
know
to build.
What
we want to continue to grow the momentum. We cannot stagnate. We've got to continue. Mm-hmm. We got to continue. So on the last weekend, we need to be very visible out. Like, we were on the streets of Sydney every day, giving people pins, talking to people, building the excitement. We put on the hockey jersey 2 weeks, which builds momentum. It's playoff time now, and that jersey was an incredible tool. So what we need to do is in elections, we need to build that momentum right through to when the polls close. And in the past, the Greens have had a hard time closing the deal on that.
Right.
And
actually, that's a really good point. You got me thinking about that, John. You can look at the BC Conservative Party as another example, and I've seen that. Not in recent elections, but in the, sort of 3-4 elections ago. And usually they end up sort of falling on their own sword. But they've been as high as 20-25% in the polls because people don't like the other options.
Well, and one could argue that's why there wasn't an NDP government for 2 terms.
Yeah.
There was a viable third party. Okay, here I am. Reverting back to old terms, splitting that right wing vote.
Yeah. Well, that was the SoCreds and the BC Liberals. I mean, that's exactly why that went down the way it did, was because that vote split right down the middle. I mean, look, if it can happen in Alberta, where 60% of people vote to the right, mm-hmm. and you end up with an NDP government because they got their vote out with 40%, and the right split right down the middle, then it can happen in British Columbia, where frankly the left of center is probably 50-50 when push comes to shove. It just depends where they land, right?
But people are not like, my experience, people are not left of center.
No,
center.
Yeah.
And this is an extremely simple simplistic kind of way to divide people.
Yeah.
And it's done to the benefit of political parties, but not to the benefit of British Columbians or to the jurisdiction.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is that we have got to come up with policy solutions for the challenges that we have, or to take advantage of opportunities that we see. And look, some of them are going to be seen as left of center. Some of them are going to be seen as right of center. Some of them are going to be some of those decisions and those best policy solutions will change over time. I mean, part of the part of what we've come down to here is that this is prescriptive notion that we apply this principle at every time, at any time. And that's just not reality. Context changes, the landscape
yes.
that a problem exists in.
I think context is changing.
Is
yes.
changing. Yeah. And so what we need is we need politicians. We need people sitting in these seats that are willing to take a look at what the challenge is or what the opportunity is.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
come up with a policy and listen to the experts and the stakeholders yeah. and the people who yeah. have the information. Yeah. And then make the correct decision. Not the left or the right decision.
Yeah.
The correct one. And a huge piece of that, as you take a big sigh, a huge piece of that is a willingness to admit when the solution that you've chosen might not be as
yes.
correct as you thought it was.
Yes.
And a willingness to go back to the well and say, let's draw some more water and see if we can find a solution that works better.
So full disclosure here, I endorsed Adam and Kaylin Harris in Victoria. I also endorsed a Liberal, and I also endorsed an NDP candidate, mostly just to kind of piss everybody off. But...
well done. Yeah.
But here's the thing, and this is why I voted Green, because you know I'm not left of center. The Green is perceived to be left of center. I'm sure that you know we can debate that, and I see
endlessly.
I see your point because I wouldn't categorize them fully as left of center. However, my point is, why does somebody like Paul Holmes, who's you know votes conservative typically, federally votes BC Liberal, typically provincially, why would I vote for the Green Party? Well, for me, it was because the provincial Liberals are completely out of touch. And when we see what's happened down in the States in particular, where there's this massive divide between left and right to the point where it's just, you know, my lies versus your lies, and nobody wants to share ideas or work together or anything else. And along comes a party that says, you know what? We're going to work with whoever we need to work with. We're going to get stuff done. We're going to come up with ideas, and some of them are going to be good. And we're okay with the idea that maybe some of our ideas won't be good at the end of the day, but we're going to at least come up with ideas. That is so, I think,
it's a
fresh.
Yeah.
In within the political culture in North America right now, that's what drew me to vote for the Green Party.
Okay, so then the devil's advocate.
Yeah,
because now we seem to be talking about politics, but I would like to go back to the
good luck talking about something else.
Yeah, I would like to go back to the debate. But anyway,
yes,
I would certainly like to revisit that a year from now. That's the skeptic.
Yeah,
that in fact it's easy to be fresh when you're not governing.
Well, you're not,
and or have to be. Of course, you guys are now in that position.
Yeah.
So we're going to see immediate evidence of whether the policies will match, the rhetoric will match the policies. But okay.
Well, but the point though, John, is there has to be compromises, right? And ultimately, that's I think a good thing for British Columbia. The Greens are going to have to compromise on some things, or if they can't.
It's a good thing for humanity.
Democracy is better negotiated than it is that, you know, it must be a negotiation.
Yeah, but so far politics has not demonstrated that can happen.
Yeah.
So it's not just Green, like everywhere. It just seems broken.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the debate. Okay? So out comes these polls that say the Greens have momentum, that there's a legitimate shift.
Yep.
Then there was the radio interview, which seemed to go odd for everyone. And I think that's when everyone woke up to, oh, holy shit, we're in a real, this is for real, so to speak.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys don't think that way, but that. Then there's the TV debate, okay? Who has the most to gain? Your leader, Andrew Weaver.
Right.
The others really only had the most to lose.
Yeah.
They couldn't really push into new territory too much. Your guy comes out of that, in my opinion, winning flat out. That doesn't mean the other two lost. He just gained what he could gain.
Right.
After that, how is the feeling in amongst you guys? It's like, wow. What? How was that?
Well, it was fantastic because what we started to hear at the door after the debate was your guy, Andrew Weaver, really impressed me. Huh. Your guy, Andrew Weaver. So elections are as much about candidates and platform as they are about the leader and whether or not that person, whether or not people have trust that leader can lead. And certainly, you know,
he demonstrated that.
He demonstrated that he can lead. And part of what I think was the expectation of an opposition party or a not government party, which is all parties other than the Liberals in this election's case, is that you're only going to question or call into question the government. But the reality is that the Greens are not either closet NDP or closet Liberals. We're Greens. And this is something that people have had a hard time wrapping their head around.
Well, still do.
So when Andrew challenged not only the premier, but also challenged the leader of the official opposition the way he did, I think what he showed British Columbians is that we're willing We're willing to say it like it is. And Andrew has a special way of saying it just like how he sees it. And, you know, for some, it's people are like, whoa. Others, they
we're
really
trying to
embrace
that.
It. So I started to hear, especially in polls that went Liberal in the last election, people going, hi. I like the way your guy goes. I like the way Andrew handled himself in the debate.
So what was the internal chatter? And maybe we're getting into too much inside politics. What was the internal chatter about a Premier Clark stating Dr. Weaver as opposed to Andrew? What did you guys think was going? What's going? What was the background to that?
Well, there's look. Okay. I don't know. I don't know. I can tell you this right now.
I have my prediction on that.
Okay, whoa, but,
you know, okay. Here's a guy who's trying to connect with the everyday British Columbian. So you characterize him as Dr. Weaver.
So it was sort of an elitist tag?
So he's presumed to be an elitist, out-of-touch guy.
Because that was clearly a tactic. Yeah. I mean, all of a sudden...
It changed, though, because
I think it backfired.
Because the moderator said, what should I call you, Mr., Doctor? He says, how about Andrew?
I know,
and so
Andrew.
Actually, what happened was, as she was trying to build his ivory tower, like this perception,
and then
the moderator said... Yeah. For clarification, what should I call you? And he's like, how about you just call me Andrew?
Yeah. And so I've always called him Andrew.
He became
a normal
person
again. Yeah. I thought it was hilarious, personally.
Well,
that's classic. That's a classic political move. Shrewd, but it backfired.
Well, and it was the same as what Harper did in the federal election when he wouldn't call Justin Trudeau Mr. Trudeau. He just called him Justin. Yeah. It was the opposite of it. Trying to diminish
to make
him
seem like a kid.
He did the opposite with Ignatieff. I'm pretty sure at some point he referred to, I don't know if he's
Professor
a doctor,
Ignatieff?
But
pretty much, right?
How
he was just visiting, right?
Yeah.
I'm driving an agenda here. I think people are fascinated by what was going on behind the scenes.
No, you know what? I think that I've always seen him as Andrew. I call him the good doctor just for fun, in speeches and stuff when I'm introducing him. But I've always seen him as Andrew.
Yeah.
There was a certain number of the supporters of our party that call him Dr. Weaver. It is not something that we've done as a party. It's not something that we do.
Yeah.
He's Andrew. And in fact, what people, even though he has serious credentials, like the most of the most serious credentials in this place, a lot of people, when you're polling or when you're focus grouping people, they like Andrew's everyday kind of, they like the fact that he wears his rugby shirts.
Yeah.
They like the fact that he wears his Hawaiian flower shirts, even though we have been battling him on that forever, trying to get him to not wear the.
I like the fact that he interacts on social media, and I know I've known Matt Wright for years. We had him on the show, who does obviously manages that process for him, so he's not Donald Trumping all over the place. but ultimately, like he's a character online, which is again refreshing as compared to what you're going to see coming from official NDP or official BC Liberals. And I think the sense probably there, and I've kind of said this for a while, is that there's more to lose for the BC Liberals and the NDP, and so they're more cautious about how they use social media.
Okay,
so,
Okay, so we're now we're it's election night. Okay.
Yeah.
Like I said to Paul, being over. Being,
what time were you up to?
I'm
very late.
been around this thing for a while, and that third party vote would generally collapse on election night. All of a sudden, it's not. Mm-hmm. And not just for you three who won, but right across the province.
Yeah.
Your vote increased. At what time after 8 o'clock do you start to go, this has changed? We're now seeing evidence of everything we've heard. And what did that feel like? Like 9-ish? 9:30? Are you going,
Well, I'll paint the picture of what's going on at McTavish Academy of the Art, where we held our election night event.
Yeah.
Starting at about 8:30, we did this whole thing for our volunteers and for our campaign team, where Emily, my wife, and I did this whole thank you thing, right? And Emily had organized gifts for all of our team and for the volunteers. And, you know, we're thinking, oh, because our experience was this went way late.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, we finally figured out that we lost. And so, like, our experience was, you know, we got a lot of time.
Yeah.
So cool. Here we are, you know.
Yeah, because you thought it would be close.
Well, we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Everybody else thought it was close. Let's talk about that after this.
Okay.
So anyways, we're going through. I thought we'd have an hour, right? So we're going through inviting everybody up and giving them their prints and their gifts and everything.
So you have an intention there of a volunteer thank you night as well.
Totally.
Yeah, okay.
We wanted to really thank people and not only that, but the staff that were with us for 8 months, you know. And
see whether or not Andrew keeps his seat and then move on, right?
and the media were there. The media were there. And I could see them starting to get fidgety, right?
Uh-huh.
And all the TV screens were off. We didn't know. Like, we weren't showing.
Really? The TV screens were off?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
And meanwhile, you'd been declared already, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we were done, and I turned to the crowd.
Okay, when are you done? You're
must be 9:15.
Okay.
And I said to the crowd, I said, so, are we winning yet?
Yeah,
and
of course.
And they just erupted. Yes, we are. So then they put the screens on.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at these numbers. I'm looking at these numbers. No. I'm looking at these numbers, and I'm going, oh my. What we had heard, what we had.
Yeah. It's not collapsing.
In fact, it's growing. and then Chandler Greet from CTV, about 20 minutes later, comes up. He goes, we just called you. You won. And I said, well, what? I won. What? Yeah, you're in. And I said, but it's early. There's
you
still
did not have the TVs on for like an hour and a half. Are you kidding me?
No.
I was glued to my TV. I watched the first poll come in for you.
I had no idea. I'll say this. Look, people say, okay, well, you know, it's going to, the media kept starting every story. This is going to be the closest three-way race in the province, and we're blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'd say, no, I don't think so. And they'd say, what? And I said, no, that's not the experience.
As you know, I incorrectly assumed some of that green vote was a liberal vote that belonged to Murray Cole last time, belonged in the sense of a political jargon.
Yeah.
And I thought it would go back to Stephen Roberts.
To that, someone said to me, they said, so this has been a long time liberal held riding. In the last election, it was an NDP riding. This time, it's a green riding. What do you say to that? Shoves the microphone in my face, and I say, this has always been the riding owned by Saanich North and the Islanders.
That's such a political thing to say.
but the this notion that it is this or it is that, you know, and honestly, it's going to be the same kind of humility that I take into the next election, whenever that is.
Did you know the turnout was going to be at that point, did you know the turnout was going to be higher?
Well, there was a lot of excitement around our race.
But you didn't know. You didn't know for sure, yeah. Because that's the other piece. I mean, obviously, what you said held true. If 76% of people showed up to vote, you know, I mean, where the question is, you know.
Where? That's very fascinating.
Yeah.
Because, and at some point, if you're interested, and I hope you are, we might have another chat about where that vote grew from. Because I think if we can isolate where that vote grew from, That could be the future of politics.
I can tell you there were a ton of millennials walking up to me in the street when we were doing our main streeting who knew exactly who I was and who wanted a button and who were excited.
But you'd never seen it until that moment.
That's right. Yeah. And the other thing that was fascinating was my kid's in grade 4, right? So he's 9 years old. The awareness of him and his peers. Now, my kid, he should be pretty aware. Yeah. Smart kid. But but his peers. I went to the cross-country meet at Centennial Park the Wednesday before the election. And the kids were coming up to me going, "You're Adam Olson. I know who you are. You're Adam Olson." And what was interesting was we got invited to a bunch of schools to do events, and I'm showing
you. Yeah, I was wondering why you guys are doing that.
The other kids.
No voters there.
They're all voters there. Those kids are paying attention. They go home and they talk to their parents. Mm. And you know, like, we weren't overtly political in those, answering questions about the process and about the system. And, you know, I'm not sitting there telling them to, you know, go make sure you go. That's not it at all. It's leaving an impression. And I can tell you the other piece to this, which was really, really critical for me, and I've done it now twice in a row, is putting your picture on, and I don't want to give a hint to any of my future competitors. It doesn't really matter.
Should we delete this part?
No. But putting your picture on your campaign signs. And Dave Calder figured it out about halfway through the election. All of a sudden, there was pictures of him on his campaign signs.
Oh, so that's a positive.
Oh.
Yeah.
What about John, though? John.
Yeah. No, John, exactly. Maybe John's not, like me.
John's not as attractive, too, if we run John.
It's important that people...
He would lose votes.
It is... No. It's not about attractiveness. It's about
personalizing
people understanding and knowing their candidate and knowing that you're going to be accessible.
Well, okay, so why I was really curious about where that vote came from. As you know, as both of you know, I was involved with the Lisa Helps campaign for me.
Yeah.
Her vote grew, okay? Yeah. And it grew in retrospect amongst the, let's say, 20 to 30-year-olds. Okay,
right.
So I'm very curious if that trend was going to continue this time, and do you see it continuing across the province?
I want the first crack at that, and then I want to hear what Adam has to say. So my assumption is most people are just they're just checked out because they know that their vote doesn't matter, and suddenly there's this wind of change happening in this riding, and they hear about this green that actually has a shot of winning, so then they show up en masse, and you get a whole bunch of people who would never vote, who all just show up on the day of election to the point where the candidate doesn't even know what the heck's going on and why where these extra 4,000 people go. That's my assumption. I'm not sure.
I think it was put to me this way. I think 100% of people vote. I just don't know that 100%, well, we know that 100% of people don't vote every time.
Mm.
So you're either discouraged from voting or your values are not being expressed by a candidate, or you're not inspired to show up on election day. And so, but I think that in general, everybody's at least voted in their, you know, not everybody, but a huge percentage of the population votes. And so part of the reason why I think that we can be successful, why we were successful, and why we can be successful in the future is because if we continue to put forward and we continue to pressure the other parties to be more positive, I mean, basically what we heard in this election, and this is instructional, I think, for everybody, what we heard from the Liberals was everything's fine. Don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that message is so out of touch with what people were telling me at the door. And not just impoverished people, wealthy people,
mm-hmm.
you know, all middle class people, all the way across the socioeconomic spectrum were telling me that that message is out of touch,
mm-hmm.
right? The other message on the other side from the opposition is everything is awful. And in fact, I did this interview with Ian Bailey from the Globe and Mail. And he said, "Can you sum up the message from your two competitors in this?" And I said, "Yeah, it's perfect." I said, "If you've watched the Lego movie, then you know exactly what I'm... The Liberals, everything is awesome, right? You can hear the little jingle, the Tegan and Sarah song in the background, everything is awesome, right?" Mm-hmm. And it's like, but we, you know, we're just got a little bit more to fix.
Can we close the show with you singing the rest of that song?
And I so and that's out of touch, right? And then on the other side, you know, the official opposition spent a lot of time criticizing the government over the last 16 years. Partly their job, but it's also their job to inspire people with the alternative.
Yeah.
Everything is awful, right? And you just replace awesome with awful, and that was the jingle that was everything is awful, right?
Well,
and what we were saying is, you know what? Look, there's awful things, And then there's awesome things. And the reality is that we need to make sure that that there's less awful things and more awesome things in the future. And it's trying to strike this balance between the two of them.
Yeah.
And so our message, you know, we're not like a middle of the road party. We are simply saying, let's acknowledge the things that need to be fixed. Let's acknowledge the things that are awesome. So, you know, I think that was a good way for us to articulate the situation that we're in.
Yeah.
You guys fight? Are you okay?
Are so inspired. We're throwing stuff at each other.
No, here's what. We're at 45 minutes. Cool. We've hit now election. You've won. You turn the TV on, and you've won.
Yeah.
And a brand new chapter in BC politics is about to unfold.
Yes.
And I think we should have another John Paul and Mike, maybe a month from now, 2 months from now, it's up to you, and see what happens. We're on the Monday.
If he's willing to come back.
We're on the Monday before Dr. Andrew Weaver declares how the Green Party is going to work with the other
parties. As our spokesperson, by the way. It's very different. It's a different...
So we would love to... Paul, do you want to end the show for us?
Well, with any deep thoughts? I want to say this about the future of this. You know, let's tease what's going to come up.
Tease, yes.
Because I think...
Wow, we get a tease.
I think that no...
well, he's not even wearing purple socks.
They're Pendleton socks.
But he is wearing a bright green shirt, so...
Oh my God, I got to get a picture of that.
So I think that... In this upcoming session, the future sessions of the legislature, there's as good a chance of a private member's bill passing in this legislature as there's ever been in this province. There is an opportunity that no matter what happens, no matter who becomes premier, that throwing a fit and pulling the house down doesn't make any sense. What needs to happen here is each and every one of the MLAs needs to understand the opportunities that we have. If you have a good idea, and it's thoughtful, and it's well thought out, and you put it forward, and you can articulate why this should pass, there is a darn good chance that your legislation, as an individual, set your party aside for a few minutes, as an individual, there's no reason why you can't convince a majority of MLAs to pass that legislation.
That's a neat tease.
The paradigm in this legislature, and we're always going to be pulled, can we go back? We're going to go back. We're going to slide back to the two-party system.
The cynic.
Let's embrace the opportunity that we have right now. And let's understand that the people of British Columbia gave us a four-year mandate, just like they've given every other legislature, every other parliament in this province, they've given us a four-year mandate. We have a responsibility as thoughtful, fully grown adults to make that 4 years work. And if we don't, if one party or another cynically pulls the house down because of, let's go right back to the very beginning of this, because it's a power game for them, and we're not sharing the responsibility that we have, then that's a sad statement to where we're at. And in fact, it does the outcome for whoever does that doesn't look to be very good. Because the reality is that a minority mandate is the same as a majority mandate. The people of British Columbia give us the responsibility to look after this place on their behalf. So let's do that.
Hmm. Just to be clear, are you predicting that this house could stand for 4 years?
I'm saying that it darn well better. Hmm. That's the job that we've been given. We haven't been given...
See, I give it about 18 months.
Well, actually, I teased Adam over the phone when we invited him for this session. He goes, here for 4 years, John.
Well, what? So what? What's the alternative?
Well,
that a party throws... I mean, look, there are things... There are unforeseen circumstances.
I think
someone passes away. Someone gets sick. It's slim... But if one of the parties throws a fit because they don't have unfettered, complete, iron-clasp control majority like we've been used to over the years, right? That they're not accepting the mandate that the people of British Columbia have given us and think that they know better, then that's a real problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that should not be taken lightly by the people of British Columbia.
See, I'm definitely going to differ with Andrew on this. I think if the Liberals do that, then that's going to hurt them. They'll go down in defeat. I think if the NDP does it, I think it's going to help them. But I think it also, in either case, actually helps the Green Party. And the Green Party could come back with 5 or 10 seats in a scenario like that. So I think you have every incentive to work with the NDP to bring down the government. Not to say you will or imply anything, but from a strictly political sense, not a sense of duty, which I'm really happy to see, but from a strictly political sense, I think the upside is up for the NDP and the Green Party in a scenario like that. Thankfully, the NDP and the Green Party seem to hate each other. So maybe we'll see it last a little longer.
He has no official comment.
No. I said I have no hatred in my heart for anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. We have differences of opinions. That's it. And hey, I'll come back to the John, Paul, and Mike show anytime.
That's fantastic. That's every really time. Fantastic.
Hey, hang on.
Let's keep these conversations.
He's not finished the sentence. Okay. If...
No,
he's coming back. He's coming back. We've been friends for a while.
Let's do it.
We really appreciate it, and it's a weird time, right, John? Like it's
weird
seen
in the sense
this.
That it's different.
Yeah,
and it is change.
Yeah,
and I think difference and change is hard for people to accept. And we will measure and talk through and dialogue what's going on.
I'm cautiously optimistic. When I predicted a Liberal minority, I actually, in my heart, wanted that to happen because I didn't want to see the NDP win because I remember the 90s vividly. I'm one of those people who will probably never vote NDP because of that period of time. Unless I can get some startling evidence that things will be different, and I haven't seen that.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to see a Liberal minority with a Green opposition, because I also think the Liberals are so out of touch and needed to be spanked a little bit to get to be able to reconnect with people. And so if nothing else, this Green position and this election, hopefully, and I think Adam alluded to this, will get politicians of all stripes to start reconnecting with the people that they're supposed to be serving and not their special interests.
Adam, over time, I have a goal for you, and that would be to get Paul Holmes to become involved with politics, which I've been saying on John Paul.
He's not very passionate about it.
No, wait, not, is he?
Doesn't know anything about it.
So let's tie this up, because I'm sure all of us have got to do some work. And
I got to get to work.
Adam Olson, MLA, thank you very much for your time. Paul Holmes, future MLA, thank you for your time. John Jurisic, out of here.
What are you?
I'm not pretty enough to be on a sign.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
Thanks, sir.